call the order of the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources on February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone. I would like, first of all, to tell everyone to turn off your cell phones, and that will include myself. There will be no public testimony during the work sessions today that we have had our public testimony on that. So if you have anything that you'd like to submit, that's fine in writing. We will accept that. And then also there will be hearings in Ways and Means as well as the Senate. So you can testify there if you so desire. We have a full schedule today. So today what we're doing is we're going to go a little bit out of order. We're going to start with House Bill 4119. But before we start, we're going to allocate a half an hour for each one of these first three, and then we're going to do our work sessions. So we will do public hearing and work session on the first three, and we'll limit, depends upon how many people we have, but we'll probably limit testimony to a two-minute period on each one of these bills because we have a substantial number of people and not enough time to do it. So first of all, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4119. Would you read it, please?
Yes. Chair and committee members, House Bill 4119. For the record, you have a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact statement issued on the bill. It does have a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. The measure authorizes the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to adopt rules creating a pilot program allowing persons to use one or more dogs to hunt cougars. Sunsets January 2nd, 2020 and declares an emergency effective upon passage.
And first of all, we're going to have Representative Springer, who is the sponsor of the bill, and you have a couple people with you as well.
I have a couple people. They're going to come up right now.
Only within 150 yards of the building. That's a
Thank you. Co-chairs and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sherry Springer, state representative for House District 17. And we had this very same conversation just about a year ago this time and met with great success in the House with this bill, but ended up with some struggles over in the Senate. So I'm back to talk about this. And because we spent, I think a good 2 to 3 meetings with lots of testimony and information on this, and I'll tell you that I've not changed a word in the bill. It's the very same bill. So I'm not going to take time to talk about all that. I'm going to highlight a couple points, but there's two people here, one on each side of mine, that have some pretty compelling information that I think you need to hear. So House Bill 4119 is, just as a reminder, a pilot project that sunsets with a report back to the 80th legislature on the results of the use of hounds in hunting cougars. Let me make a couple points. First of all, let's be very clear, we hunt cougars in this state right now. We absolutely do. We have very low-cost tags. Most of them are sold in Sportsman's Pack. If you fill a cougar tag, you can go get another cougar tag. So we're already doing that. We are already, in certain situations at certain times, hunting cougars with hounds. We use agents of the state. Those are people that pass, a fairly small set of criteria, and they use their hounds to hunt cougars in particular areas. So the point that I really want to surface here and make sure that we're all clear on is that we're already doing it. However, we pay to do it. And I have people literally knocking on my door saying, let me pay to do it for you. And this is a fiscal responsibility piece. This does not do anything to the quotas. This does not do anything to the Cougar Management Plan. Simply allows counties individually, if they want to participate, if they have a problem, to participate in the program. So those counties that don't like this, they don't have to participate. Those counties, like my county in particular, one of them, Linn County, we have a serious problem. We need help addressing that problem. So at that point, I know I'll take questions. You probably maybe want to wait until after the other two people here speak. So I'm going to kick it off to Kevin here. He's going to tell you a little bit, and then Donette's going to follow up.
Okay. Thank you, Sherry. Chairman Clem, Chairman Esquivel, and members of the committee, thank you first for the opportunity to speak. My name, for the record, is Kevin Strong. I'm the business manager for the Sweet Home School District, and I am here to voice support for House Bill 4119. To kind of give you some background information, the Sweet Home School District is dealing with an increasing number of cougar encounters near our schools and near our school bus stops. It appears that the traditional backcountry areas are full and cougars are moving into populated areas such as our community. And I'd just like to share with you some of the recent encounters that the school district has had with cougars. Going back in November 2008, our Holly Elementary School secretary saw a young cougar along a road near houses 300 yards from the school. She reported the cougar, which was later shot as a mercy killing. The cougar was undernourished and had recently tangled with a porcupine. In February 2010, a cougar scuffled with three dogs on property across the street from Holly Elementary School. In March 2010, a 156-pound cougar was trapped 1 mile from Holly Elementary after it had killed two calves and a cow. Also in March 2010, a 125-pound cougar was trapped between Holly Elementary School and Crawfordsville Elementary School after it had killed six goats. In May 2010, a resident videotaped a mother cougar and two young cougars walking across his backyard within 1/2 mile of Sweet Home Junior High School and 2/3 of a mile of Oak Heights Elementary School and Sweet Home High School. Also that month, a school bus driver reported that a large adult cougar crossed the road in front of her bus en route to Crawfordsville School. The cougar was about 600 yards from the school and moving toward it in the morning. Students were out on the playground prior to school starting. They were immediately evacuated from the playground and brought inside. Next month, in June 2010, a Sweet Home police officer sighted a cougar in the 3100 block of Main Street, not far from Hawthorne Elementary School. Most of the information I want to present today is just straight factual, but, you know, keep this in mind. You know, not only for our community, but I think for cougars themselves, when cougars are being forced out of the backcountry and are on Main Street, you know, that's a significant issue for us. I see my time is up. I've provided additional information there on other cougar sightings that have occurred in and around our schools, but Danette has a firsthand experience, and so she can help provide more information to you on that.
Chairman Clem and Chair Esquivel and members of the committee, my name is Danette Jewel Calkins. I live in Sweet Home, Oregon. I work for Sweet Home School District Number 55 in the Transportation Department as a secretary, and I drive a special needs route. I was on my route on the 19th of January, and I actually hit a cougar. It's quite scary. They're very large animals. I could see it above the hood of the Suburban that I was driving as I was going up to get one of the students. When we came down the hill, it came down off the bank on the left-hand side and was running so fast, I had no time to react. And I wasn't going very fast. I was only going 25 to 30 miles an hour. But we hit it hard, and we heard the thump, and I got stopped, but it continued off down into the brush on the right-hand side of the road. My assistant that was with me, her first instinct was to open the door and check to see how much damage was done so that we could continue on. And we both looked at each other. That was a big cat, you know, and it was quite scary. So neither one of us got out, and I called dispatch, and they said not to get out and check out the mechanical problems, if there was any, just to continue on, and if I had some, they would come out and meet me. This isn't the only time that I've had an encounter with a cougar in the past year, and they're very menacing. I had a cougar on our back patio that stared in our house at my mom and I sitting at the dining room table. It just, something needs to be done. They need to be taken care of, taken back up into the woods where they belong. They're making their territories our towns. Thank you for the opportunity to come up and tell you. It's quite scary. And I'll answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you. Any questions? Any comments?
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment, and it gets to Kevin's comments regarding the school district. We've had some similar occurrences in our Hood River County School District, particularly up in the Parkdale Elementary. Earlier this year, we had to pull the kids in off of the playground at recess because there was a cougar in the adjacent orchard there. But the thing that's important, I think, to make is that, land use issues haven't changed in that area in a long, long time. There's been the same number of orchards, the same number of homes, the same number of schools. What's changed is the numbers of cougars that are in the area. So I just wanted to get that on the record. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions? Any further comments? Thank you. I'm going to temporarily recess this public hearing on 4119. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4098. And we are privileged to see our governor here in front of us. Would you run the bill, please, and let us know what it is?
Chair Escobar and committee members, House Bill 4098, for the record, it has a revenue statement that was issued, and we are still waiting, but I have the understanding that we will be receiving a fiscal statement. It has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. You have a -4 amendment in front of you that stipulates the direction is part of managing state forest lands to secure the greatest permanent value of the lands in the state, and it changes annual timber harvest amount to 85%.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, John Ketzhaber, Governor of the State of Oregon. I appreciate very much the opportunity to make a few comments on this bill today. This legislation clearly stems from the desire to revitalize the economy of some of our hardest hit rural communities, and I applaud certainly the motivation behind this piece of legislation. The fact is that despite increased diversification in many parts of our state, Oregon forests are going to remain a key element to the economic futures of many areas. Forests are a leading source of wealth in terms of capital, jobs, local fiscal stability. We have some of the most productive forest lands in the world, and it gives us a very significant competitive advantage in terms of providing wood to the world, and that's a competitive advantage that we need to maintain and nurture. Having said that, I want to suggest to you that the problem, the short-term challenge of job creation and helping our rural economic communities, in my view, is not primarily a volume problem, and the problem is much more related to federal land management than to state land management. If you look at what's happening on our private lands, which produce by far the largest timber volume out of our state forests, we see record levels of raw log exports. In fact, log exports have increased 400%. Over the export volumes in 2010. Every log that's exported could support about 8 jobs here in the state, and Business Oregon has estimated that if all the logs that were exported last year were milled in Oregon, it could produce 1,800 jobs. Having said that, there are very good market reasons for exporting logs today, and it's not just the good price of logs in Asia. It's the fact that in a dormant housing market, there's a significant reduction in demand for finished log products out of our local mills. So I guess my point is that during a period of domestic housing decline, when demand is down, the response to the unemployment that results from that needs to go beyond the age-old debate about volume and needs to look at how we can actually maximize and diversify the economic value of the logs that we actually are producing here in the state of Oregon. Now, the second point I want to make is to draw a distinction between private land and public land and talk about the tremendous management imbalance that I think takes place on our public lands. As you know, our public lands, both federal and state, are managed under multiple use legal mandates that seek to balance a whole host of social values, not just the industrial production of timber. And there is a huge management imbalance on our public lands, which I think is directly related to the problem you're trying to address through this legislation. State forests constitute 3% of our total forest land in the state of Oregon and produce about 10% of our timber. Federal lands constitute 59% of our timberland and produce 12% of our timber. In other words, 870,000 acres of state land produces 10% of our timber volume. About 18 million acres of federal land produces about 12%, 2% more than that. So the fact is the majority of the critically threatened mill infrastructure and the majority of our deeply depressed rural communities exist in landscapes that are dominated by federal rather than by state forest lands. As I highlighted in my testimony to the Board of Forestry in November, this imbalance on federal lands, or the imbalance on public land management, is driving a number of fundamental problems that plague rural Oregon. High unemployment, obviously, unstable local financing, loss of mill infrastructure, and an increased pressure on non-federal lands, which is creating both environmental and resource impacts that I think are, in the long term, unsustainable. On federal land policy, I think this pendulum has swung too far towards what I would call management by paralysis. Litigation, underfunding of federal land management agencies, cumbersome management procedures have brought federal timber harvest to a de facto stall in many parts of the state, resulting in forest health problems, habitat diversity problems, and reliance on federal payments to counties, which we're seeing playing out down in Southwest Oregon today. So it seems to me the solution, the long-term solution to this, is to pursue pathways that take us out of this social and legal conflict and allow us to increased active management on these federal lands that will improve forest health, improve local economies, and improve the health of those communities. There are many robust examples of how we are doing that actually today in Oregon. One was the investment of our Strategic Reserve Fund recently that helped catalyze a movement of work crafted by local partners over in Malheur County to take more wood out of our national forests without opposition, either social or legal. Another example would be the recent $6.8 million grant that Oregon was given from the USDA for collaborative forestry projects that can both create jobs and produce a significant amount of fiber off these same forests. Now, granted the need across the state, whether that is economic need or the health of the forest and health of ecosystems, is daunting. But the payoff on these kinds of investments is very, very significant. It's estimated that for every $1 million that we spend on forest health or watershed restoration, we create over 16 jobs, which is comparable to the job creation of investment in public infrastructure projects. So as governor, I'm very committed to scaling up these collaborative efforts across the landscape of Oregon to benefit forest health and rural economies, and also to promote conservation wins that can keep us from getting entangled in controversy over the loss of species or the Federal Endangered Species Act. We'll be bringing on a full-time policy position in my office in the next couple of weeks who will lead the effort to address federal forest management issues, particularly the O&C lands. That individual will be working with the timber industry, with conservation groups, with local governments, and with our federal delegation to make reforms in how we manage our federal forest lands in Oregon, a key priority of my administration. Finally, let me make a couple of comments directly to the provisions of this bill as it relates to state lands. As you know, state lands historically have sought to achieve a balance between economic values, revenue to local government, and conservation protection for sensitive habitats. The existing greatest public value rule is the statute, is the tool through which we seek to do this. That statute was reviewed recently by the Board of Forestry, which reaffirmed its commitment to the current GPV, and I also remain committed to the greatest permanent value rule. It seems to me that these lands, this 3% of our forested landscape that are owned and managed by the state of Oregon, constitute a promise to the future. It's clearly a promise to counties for a stable and sustainable supply of timber, revenue, and jobs. But it's also a promise to find that balance where management actions sustain the health of the land. It's a promise where people and human systems are an integral part of maintaining natural systems. And it's a promise to try to optimize the multiple values that we seek to bring off these lands without compromising any single value. In Oregon, we call that balance the greatest permanent value rule. Where that should take us, restoring the balance, the harvest balance on federal land, and maintaining the balance on state land is to a Oregon state forest management policy that, in fact, is balanced. So federal lands would be managed to provide more timber volume and more diverse ranges for habitats, as well as preservation of key conservation values. State lands would continue to be managed for a balance between conservation and economy and local government needs. And private lands would be under less pressure for harvest production than they have been for the last 20 years, but would also have access to diversified markets for wood products here in Oregon to reduce the flow of logs overseas. So I guess in conclusion, I would say that the real key in my mind to increasing employment in these timber communities is by collaborative efforts to break the deadlock on how we manage federal forest land. Now, I believe that the legislature and certainly myself share the same values. We are interested in nourishing and sustaining local economies. We're interested in jobs that support families. We're interested in healthy forests and healthy watersheds. But I think mandating timber production at 85% growth on the state's public lands runs counter to those values. Will create, will not solve the problem in the short term because it's not a volume problem. Will do little to change the management of federal lands, and in fact will polarize the landscape between the very parties that are going to have to come together if we're going to be successful in solving the challenges on the ONC land and the challenges facing the management of forests in northeast in Oregon. So I just understand and empathize with the short-term motivation here, but I believe that this would actually worsen the situation in terms of getting to the larger landscape scale fix we seek, and I'm not sure that we'll have a short-term impact on job the challenges in these local communities. So I guess I would ask you to at least consider those concerns and work with me and the Board of Forestry to develop a comprehensive forest management strategy that creates simultaneously addresses environmental values, economic values, community values, and an approach that is not only financially sustainable and environmentally sustainable, but politically sustainable as well.
Thank you, Governor. Representative Shaw.
Thank you, Mr. Governor, and thank you for coming. And I agree with your comment about the federal government and federal lands, and we all understand on this committee the pressures on private land. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, I've only been working in this building for 10 years, and you've been in here longer than me, and for, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 years, we've been talking about creating a comprehensive forest management plan. And guess what? We are not nourishing those rural communities, economies, and cultures. We're not. You know the unemployment rate as well as I do. And if we wait until the domestic market goes up to get to raise the volume on state lands, by the time we get through that debate, the economy will be back down and we'll be right back where we are. We are dripping with resources in the state, and I'm gonna, you know this as well as I, if not better. We have slow to recovery. We have incredible unemployment, especially in our rural areas. Number one in child hunger, one of the highest rates of youth homelessness. You know all this stuff, all of it. And we're not moving anywhere on forestry. We haven't in 10 years since I've been in this building, and it goes way back before that. I just have to tell you, I believe this may help. I'm confident this will help. And Mr. Governor, with all due respect, if this legislature and you don't move on this or something like it, in my humble opinion, we are irresponsible and not fulfilling our obligation to put people back to work so they can feed and clothe and house themselves and their children and pay taxes so that we can provide the services that people demand. With all due respect, sir, that's how I feel. But I really do appreciate you coming here, and I look forward to working with you on getting people back in the woods. And I believe in your heart you want to do that. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Shuffler, I appreciate the difference in points of view here. I think it is equally irresponsible to hold out false hope to people. I do not think you can solve a 9% unemployment rate on 800,000 acres of federal of state forest land. I just don't think it'll happen. And you need to go where the money is, as the bank robber Mr. Sutton said in the last century. Why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is. The wood is on federal land, and most of the communities that are belly up, Roseburg, these northeast Oregon, those are federal forests surrounding those. And I just think that the long-term fix is creating a climate, and admittedly we haven't got over the bar. But I think there's a unique opportunity here afforded by the county payments issue. There's a sense of urgency here that's never been there before, and there's actually productive talk of a fundamental change in federal land management going on in Congress right now, and I think we need to capitalize on that.
Mr. Chair, briefly, I agree. This one component will not, because what, we drag more water out of Columbia, we build a giant bridge across that river, we build some LNG terminals, we export coal, energy, logs to anybody who's willing to buy it until our economy gets better. We have some flexible land use for industry. We expand that port up in Portland. We dredge Coos Bay. There's a lot of things. There's a lot of components going in, and this is just one, Mr. Governor. And it is not false hope. It's false hope to sit here and suggest that if we don't do any of those things, we're going to drag ourselves out of this rut. Thank you. With all due respect, sir.
By the way, Governor, we would love to have a 9% unemployment rate in my county.
I understand.
Representative Clem.
So Actually, I have very mixed feelings about it. You know, I grew up in Southern Oregon. I very deeply feel all these issues personally, and I also grant that this is not going to solve the supply problem. First of all, there's no supply problem momentarily. There's no doubt about that, and I really do worry that having a big teapot or a tempest in a teapot over the state forest is going to harm what potentially could be coalitions on federal land. I guess, you know, the important thing for me to say is the fact that you're even here is more leadership than we've seen on this issue in a long time. And the fact that you're going to hire, I didn't know you were going to hire a staff person to work on this. I mean, this is a huge, the federal forests are where the challenge are. And if you are willing to continue to show this kind of leadership, I think at some point some of us are going to say, okay, fine, we're done debating some of these smaller issues because we're finally going after the real target. I think part of the problem is it's a sort of chicken and egg deal where we hadn't seen a lot of action in recent years, so we end up having these proxy debates over the state forest land, which are meaningful, you know, in a few communities, no doubt about it. But our challenge, I think, is, and I expressed this to Richard not long ago, I mean, I really want to see the governor out there on federal forests. I didn't really, he couldn't tell me all these things were in the works, apparently. So I want to thank you. I hope this vote and this bill don't upset that apple cart. I'm worried they will, frankly. I am worried. And I've told the environmental community, please come with a proactive plan. You can be a yes instead of just always being no. Please. You're not doing anyone a service right now. So thank you for showing leadership, and I understand your opinions on this particular bill.
Mr. Chairman, just before I leave, I submitted, along with my testimony, the testimony I provided to the State Board of Forestry in November, which should give you a more comprehensive sort of sketch of where I see this going. Thank you.
Governor, I would like to add one thing. First of all, thank you for being here. Second of all, I hope that we can count on you to lead, because I don't want to accept timber payments from the federal government. I just want our land back. I want to know the sovereignty of the state of Oregon. I would like to have us to have the ability, because I think that we do our forest practices quite well. We could do a harvest plan, and you could perpetually log on all logged federal lands, including BLM, which is ONC lands, and never touch a piece of old growth. But you could log perpetually for 120 years, and I would hope that you would help us achieve that.
Thank you.
Anything else? Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, I'm going to temporarily close the public hearing, recess that public hearing on 4098. I'm going to temporarily recess 4098 and go back, reopen 4119. Next group of people we have that are testifying.
Back to Cougar. Back to Cougar.
I'm going to get the fours. Okay. Al Akins.
Hawkins.
And Gil Rydell.
Our next group. Al.
Fully calibrated schedules.
Go ahead, Gil.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Gil Rydell, Association of Oregon Counties. Very quickly, I just want you to know for the record that the Association of Counties supports House Bill 4119.
Thank you. Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Al Elkins with the Oregon Hunters Association. We, too, are in support of House Bill 4119. This bill contains approximately 653 words, and approximately 20 of those words begin with R. None of those R words are repeal. This bill does not repeal the current measure that's on the statutes. What it basically does is use that as an umbrella. It gives the counties and the state of Oregon the flexibility to do what they need to do to solve the cougar management problem. And it also adds a sunset, which we also support. So we hope that you will pass this bill out. Thank you.
Any questions?
Evidently not, because they left.
Laurel Hines.
Or
the second name. Looks like I think it's Flag.
Newler?
Yes,
Miller?
Jane Miller?
Miller?
Yes,
Jane. Jane Miller Flag? Does that sound correct?
Yeah, that'll
okay.
do.
And then Ivan Malushki. Welcome.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you, representatives, for the chance to talk. My name is Laurel Hines, and I wanted to specify, first of all, that the things that were mentioned with the people Representative Springer brought up, that none of them were actual attacks. One was hitting a cougar by a car. The other was cougars hanging around an elementary school. And I would like to specify that if you look up the statistics on danger of humans from cougars, it's actually something like 1 in 100 million. And I invite all of you to research that on the internet and find something more accurate than that, but I think that's the current statistics on that. I live in a rural area in South Salem where there's the people around me, it's a rural residential area, 2 to 5 acres. We had a cougar come in the lot right next to us that's still wooded, and it's killed 2 young deer just over this past winter, and it comes into our area every single winter and kills a couple deer. It has never hurt a child or an adult or attacked anybody. Most cougars are seen and then disappear. And the statistics show that killing cougars actually creates more of a hazard, and I don't have time to explain why that's true. The voters have made it very clear that they do not want hunting of cougars by hounds. There's already, as Representative Springer specified, the state will come out and handle cougar complaints with their own people, and there's already hunting tags to hunt cougar, and more cougar have actually been killed by hunters, from my understanding, with the cougar tags than they did with hounds before. So I really think that there's no emergency to overcome what the voters have voted in not once but twice, with their initiative to ban cougar hunting with hounds, and there is no reason for this bill. And I don't think you should go against what the voters want when there's no emergency. And I also want to add that this would complicate wildlife laws and probably create more administrative costs, taking funds from education and other needed services. Thank you.
Now? Okay, my name is Jane Miller. I'm Director for District 4 for Marine Soil and Water Conservation and Director of Oregon Cougar Action Team. I am so sorry to hear that ODFW's current cougar management plan has made it more unsafe for Oregonians and our livestock, because they know in their stats that before Measure 18, when they were killing less cougar, we had less cougar conflict issues around any schools or livestock. After Measure 18, ODFW changed their internal policies and began to kill more cougar. And they noticed in their stats that with the increased killing of cougar, they had the increase of cougar conflict issues, both for humans and livestock. So, also, our Oregon State Police stats show that poaching of cougar exceeds the legal killing of cougar, which contributes to the conflict issue. Furthermore, poaching contributes to the black market wildlife of cougar cubs. Cubs can be easily domesticated, taken from the wild, raised in captivity. Since we have a prolific poaching problem that's draining millions of dollars from Oregonians, we need to take a look at that first, because these cubs, cougar that are showing up in the wild, may not have been raised in the wild because they're not acting like normal cougar raised in the wild. We already have bills both through the Agriculture Department, ODFW, and our federal government killing cougar that increases the safety issues we have in Oregon regarding the cougar conflicts. The voters voted on this. If we have what we believe to be an issue with cougars, we need to go back to the voter, and we need to give them information. They need to have stats, not stories. Facts, not stories. Killing more cougar makes it less safe for Oregonians and livestock. I have a plan. It's called License to Protect, and as our governor said, go where the money is. License to Protect is a sustainable opportunity to harness the wildlife watching income for cougar and wolves that currently right now exceeds the money by $2 million brought in by hunters here in Oregon. I have looked at the stats both at the federal level for other states and for Oregon and realized that this is a common factor across the United States. License to Protect is a better way to manage Oregon's cougar and wolves and bring in a sustainable income to rural Oregonians. But most of all, License to Protect gives every Oregonian an opportunity to be an overseer of our great natural predators and connects every Oregonian to good land ethics. Please see the worldwide... Oh, I have a website, www.orecat, with the stats on this license, and I'd like to see it as a bill in 2013. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairs Escobel and Clem, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ivan Molusky. I'm the Conservation Director for the Oregon Chapter Sierra Club. I've submitted some written testimony. I'll keep these comments brief. As Representative Springer noted, this bill is nearly identical to a bill we opposed last session as well, so our concerns are on the record. A couple issues I'll flag for you, however. One, we are concerned about unintended consequences. There is evidence from Washington State that has shown that indiscriminate hunting of cougars can actually lead to population and territorial destabilization in cougar populations, which can actually create some of the human cougar conflicts that people have complained about here today when you destabilize populations in a way that's not well planned. Number two, as Representative Springer noted, we already kill a lot of cougars in the state. The state already has a program in which agents are used to hunt down and track cougars with dogs in certain scenarios. If there are cougars near schools, the ODFW has the tools it needs to take those cougars out. The two issues I'd flag here are this. To the extent that this is a revenue question, I might recommend that you consider raising the price of cougar tags. I believe it's something on the order of $14 right now for both in-state and out-of-state hunters. Even black bear tags for out-of-state hunters are significantly more expensive. That gets to part of the revenue question. And on the hound hunting question, there's an issue here that I think you may discover that this can become a private property rights issue. The reason why right now ODFW focuses its hound efforts in eastern Oregon is because you have a lot of public land. When they've tried to do this in southwest Oregon where you have a lot of private property, you get issues with hounds coming on people's property, getting into trouble, whatnot. I own property in rural Clackamas County. I can guarantee you if a pack of dogs came on my property, I would not take it lightly, and I don't think most Oregonians would. So we'd urge you to reject this legislation at this time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions? Comments? Thank you. I'm going to temporary recess House Bill, the public hearing on House Bill 4119. I'm going to reopen the hearing on House Bill 4098. Representative Olson. Sorry, folks, but we have to work these people in. They're going from committee to committee to committee, so please be patient with us.
I told them I'd come back in an hour.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Andy Olson, and I am the state representative out of the Albany area. I just want to continue on from what I've heard that you've already heard and listened to a portion of House Bill 4098 regarding the timber issue. You know, from my perspective, I can't share the urgency with you right now of why we need this, and honestly, it's not big enough for what we really do need, but the thing is it's a foot in the door, and it helps us to get busy to where we need to go with boosting our economy right now. So I'm going to walk through just a little bit with this. I mean, you get what's happening with the forests in our state. 60% of those are forest lands. We've got 19% of those are private. 4% are state lands. And this is all we're focusing on. The balance of those belong to the tribes. So with that, I'm going to move forward with you here and share this with you. I do appreciate the opportunity to come before this committee. Currently, Oregon's most abundant resource is timber, and is being underutilized. The lack of productivity has hurt Oregon's economy and its rural counties. With that said, House Bill 4098, not only impacts the activity on forest lands, but rather it is limited on the 4% of timber that is owned by the state of Oregon. Currently, the Oregon Department of Forestry only harvests between 65 to 70% of what is allowable for the harvest under the Forest Practices Act, FPA. The Dash 4 amendments that are accompanied with this would make a modest change to the state's current policy by requiring the state to harvest a minimum of 85% of the allowable harvest under the FPA. So this is what you get as a result of if you pass House Bill 4098. You're going to get in the neighborhood of about 2,000 jobs. Those jobs pay in the area of about $42,000 a year. What it means is that you would get an additional $33 million in new taxes over the five-year period of time. And then also what it would do is it would provide an additional $441 million into the private sector through personal income tax over the five-year period of time. So with that, I mean, I just want to share with you, this is a pretty simple concept. There's going to be other folks that will follow behind me to give you a lot more detail with it. But again, I understand where the governor's office is right now, wanting to have some concern toward the polarization maybe of what may have occurred on the federal lands. We are not in control of what's happening federally. We are not 3,000 miles away to dictate what we do here in Oregon. We are here in Oregon, and we have the ability to do something that's very simple to at least put about 2,000 people back to work. So I provide that information to you, and I hope you strongly consider this and move this bill forward. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you, Representative. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Okay, I'm going to temporarily recess the... the House Bill 4098, and I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 4089. Senator, well, we're ready for you. We're not sure what bill we're on, but we're ready for you, Senator.
Hope we're on House Bill 4089.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Chris Edwards, State Senator in Eugene and Junction City. I'm here to testify on House Bill 4089 and the Dash 1 Amendment. It is my understanding that this is a consensus amendment and that you will have testimony from both the City of Eugene and special districts, special districts as to their neutrality, City of Eugene as to their support for the Dash 1 amendments, but I will let them tell you that. The amendments skinny up the bill a little bit. The applicability still applies only to Lane County, still applies only to, and it would only apply to properties within, moves it from within 500 feet of the city to 200 feet. The property would have had to have been owned by the property owner prior to 1973, which was, of course, when Senate Bill 100 passed, which kind of set in motion the entire changes to our land use system. And there is a sunset on the provisions of the bill as well. And so with that, I think that we've gotten everybody to a neutral or supportive position for this pilot program. And respectfully request the support of the members of this committee.
Any questions? Comments? We're letting you off easy, Senator. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we have three people that will testify on this bill, and then we'll be have our public hearing finished on this bill, so we'll continue on it. Brenda Wilson.
Marcy
Dennison? Dennison?
I should ask her. She's actually.
And then Mark Landau.
And then maybe ask if she wants to talk about this or Cougars.
She might be here on Cougars. They're the flip.
Ma'am, are you here on Cougars or are you here on this land use bill?
Everything.
Everything?
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay, so 2 minutes
per bat. 2 minutes per person.
Co-Chair Clem, Co-Chair Escobel, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brenda Wilson. I'm the Intergovernmental Relations Manager for the City of Eugene. You have my written testimony, so I'll keep this brief. The City of Eugene strongly supports House Bill 4089. This is a simple bill. Basically, it temporarily revives a very unique tool that we had prior to the dissolvement of the Lane County Boundary Commission in 2007. We have a unique area that is northwest of our town, which is within our urban growth boundary. We had this tool prior to 2007 when the Boundary Commission went away, and some landowners got stuck in after that the Boundary Commission was dissolved. This would allow us to help those landowners out while we are looking at the very unique situation that's going on in the River Road Santa Clara area and trying to come up with some long-term solutions for those very unique issues. Some stakeholders believe that the original draft of the bill was a little bit broad. We've worked with them to draft the Dash 1 amendments, which we fully support. Basically, what this would do is a landowner who was within the jurisdiction of the Boundary Commission prior to its dissolvement in 2007, who is within 200 feet of city property, who purchased their land before 1973, can annex into the city of Eugene voluntarily as long as they do so prior to January 1st, 2013. This would allow some of those landowners who are stuck to do what they want to with their property while we are working on a long-term solution for the area. Again, thank you for the opportunity to present our position, and we urge your support.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm Marcia Emerson, Rainforest Wildlife. We're generally in favor of this very much, with one exception. The River Road area is very unique and very beautiful, and it needs to be kept in its farm type, in farm and forest type nature, okay? And so there should be some kind of something in there to include the, not just pave everything over and cut everything down and kick the farmers out, okay? Just because it's in the urban growth boundary, it needs to be able to keep its natural qualities. And other than that, I think it's very good that it's entered into Eugene, the city.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Mark.
Good afternoon, co-chairs Clem and Esquivel. Mark Landauer with the Special Districts Association of Oregon. The Special Districts Association is neutral on the Dash 1 amendment. We would oppose the underlying bill as it is currently drafted and would certainly encourage the committee to adopt the Dash 1 amendment. To expand on Ms. Wilson's comments, I have spoken personally with the executive or the manager of the River Road Park District. That is the area within which this dispute has sort of taken place between the city and the park district. We're very encouraged that the city was willing to work with us to try to find a sweet spot on this, and the Dash 1 amendment is reflective of that. We're also very encouraged that the city of Eugene has begun to enter into an urban services discussion with the River Road Park and Rec District as well as the Santa Clara Fire District in that area, and we hope that those discussions will be productive in the future, and this is one way to build trust by passing the Dash 1 amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Any comments?
Just one. Brenda, I just want to establish, I heard you say it, but for the record, I generally will vote against anything that's got the word annexation in it, but this is voluntary annexation is required to use the provision. There's no hostile annexations, no other kinds of annexations. The person would request to use the provision of this bill only.
Co-Chair Clem, that is exactly right. They must approach the city of Eugene and ask to be annexed in.
Thank you.
You know, that saves a lot of problems. We do that in Medford. We really don't have any hassles with annexations at all because it's a voluntary basis. So, anything else? Seeing none, thank you. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4089. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 4089.
You're trying to make Senator Edwards carry it. Oh, sorry. Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 4089.
Co-Chair Clem moves the Dash 1 amendments to be an appendage on House Bill 4089. Any discussion? Any comment? Anyone object? Seeing none, so move.
Chair, I move House Bill 4089 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Clem has moved House Bill 4089 to the House floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Any comment? Any objection? Seeing none, so move.
Representative Cowan is
and Representative Cowan is excused due to a family emergency.
I'll carry it.
Would you like to carry that?
Yep.
Co-chair Clem? Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on 4089. I'm going to open up again the recessed. We're back to 4119, so I'm going to reopen the public hearing on 4119. Let's see where we at on that list. I have a Cindy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to ask, I know we are so cramped today on time. I'd love to hear with your indulgence from the Department of Fish and Wildlife on this. I have a feeling they're maybe in the overflow room.
Mr. Angler's in the other room.
Yeah, I plan to bring them in
at
the end, so to cap, which we're teeing it up for. Cindy Burko, Scott Beekstead. I'm sorry, I'm slaying it, Scott.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And then Marcia Dennison again.
Okay, thank you, co-chairs, for hearing me today and members of the committee. I'm glad that I have the opportunity to present my side of this. My name is Cindy Burko. I live in Dallas, Oregon. I have lived in cougar area for almost 20 years. Thankfully, I have a very smart cougar over there. I've had llamas, I've had cats, dogs, horses, so have the neighbors. In 20 years, I can tell you that there has been no significant difference in predation by the cougars since we banned hunting with dogs, since Measure 18, any of that. I have some real concerns about what this 4119 will bring. For instance, how do you tell a cougar to stay in the county where the pilot project is happening? That seems to me to be a little impossible. What if the cougar runs from a participating county to a non-participating county? How are we going to handle that? It seems like that could wind up to be quite problematic. One of the things that we have found out in the last 10 years or so about hunting cats is that before, when it was open for dog hunting, the sport hunters would go up and kill the big toms. Well, the argument is, yeah, a young juvenile will just go up and take over that territory. That's not necessarily how it works. Several juveniles will try to take over the territory. One will dominate and the rest will still be back out in the fringe areas. What that one big tom can do is take care of potentially dozens of juveniles that try to invade, and they're self-regulating on that point. Since the Cougar Management Program came into effect, and I believe it was 06, that Dr. Robert Wilgus, the Director of Large Carnivore Conservation at Washington State University at Pullman, said in a summary analysis of that Cougar Management Plan, and I quote, "There was no scientific evidence that administrative removals achieved any of the stated goals, Perrin, reduced complaints, livestock depredations, and increased elk calves. The report lacks any scientific credibility." And in my purview, this bill that we're presenting, 4119, just builds on that Cougar Management Plan and will exacerbate what was a bad idea to start with. And I wanted to quote from you.
Time's up, ma'am.
Pardon me?
Your time's up.
Oh, is it?
Okay. We're over here flagging you.
I was just on a roll.
You're on a roll. So, sorry.
Co-chairs, member of the committee, for the record, Scott Beekstead, State Director for the Humane Society of the United States, a resident of Southern Oregon up in North Douglas County, here in strong opposition to House Bill 4119. It occurred to me that sometimes it feels like if it weren't for cougars, wolves, and sea lions, I'd be having some sort of existential crisis. But I'm very proud to stand up for these creatures, and I have a long history as the original director of the Measure 18 campaign. And I think I'd like to spend my brief time here just going back to what was at stake and the reason why Oregon voters overwhelmingly banned the use of dogs to hunt cougars with sport. They did it because they find that practice to be impermissibly cruel and unsporting. It was a value judgment.
And the same arguments and the same fear tactics that are present here today were present back then. The arguments haven't gone away. And as a matter of integrity for the democratic process, I would just urge you, if you want to see a value judgment made by Oregon voters repealed, then put it to the voters and let them repeal it. You know, the Measure 18 was written so that individual cougars that are causing problems can be taken out with the use of dogs, and that is exactly what's happening right now. If you want to go back to the way it was before, then it needs to go to the voters. It was their decision to ban this practice. It should be their decision to repeal it. Thank you.
Hi, Marsh Dennison, Rainforest Wildlife again. The dog hunting that ODFW has been using since the plan began is causing what appears to be a cougar crisis. What it is a crisis for the cougars because they go out and kill the mama cougar, and the starving kittens come to town in search of food. We got bird feeders for us, and dogs, cats, everything, and they're starving to death out there in the clear cuts. Everything dries up, and in the fall they all come down with a deer anyway to drink because everything dries up there in the hills. It happens every year, so people every year they say, "Oh my gosh, there's a cougar! I never did see that happen before." And that's just a bunch of bunk, because I live with cougars. I saw a cougar. Well, before I finish that, the kitten has to live with its mom for 3 years, and she teaches it to stay away from people, and she teaches how to forage on its own without being lost and coming to town and all that, and then there's no problem. But you kill the mom, and then you have all these little cougar kittens coming into town because they don't know what else to do. It doesn't mean there's any more of them or anything. And also, like the coyotes, we're hunting the coyotes and found out there became more and more coyotes the more we hunted, and that's because the range of the individual coyotes got bigger and they had more food, so they had more pups and kittens. And we warned ODFW about this at the beginning. Anyway, please, this is a horrible idea. ODF needs to start using science instead of hound dogs. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you.
Barbara Wilson.
Chair Clem and Co-Chair Esquivel, thank you. And members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to speak. I represent Mazamas, which is a 3,000-member climbing and hiking group, and I represent Friends of Mount Hood, located on the north side.
For the record, would you give your name, please?
Oh, I thought I did. Barbara Wilson. I understand the problem with individual cougars, and that's been expressed by the first three people who spoke, but I am very much opposed to this proposal. My first question would be, why would someone volunteer to take out his dogs and chase a cat up a tree and stand at the bottom of the tree and kill it and watch it drop to the ground? Why would a person volunteer to do that? And my answer would be, because it's fun. It's recreation. And that's the part that I disagree with completely. These are magnificent animals. If you would see one in the wild, I think you would be perhaps a little frightened, but also hopefully appreciative of its great beauty. Now, Mazamas have hiked in cougar country for 125 years, and in 125 years, they have been observed by cougars and stalked by cougars, but never attacked by cougars. I am a little wary if I hike alone. I know cougars are there, but they don't bother me. They are at least a mile and a half away, sitting on top of a rock, watching me walk by, and they do not bother me. I would appreciate your indulgence in observing these magnificent animals. Problem animals need to be dealt with, but this is not a good idea to have freelance hunters sent out into the woods with these dogs. Thank you.
Any questions? Comments? Thank you. Rebecca Roth. That's
I don't know how to address you. Co-chairs? Okay. My name is Rebecca Roth, and I'm here in support of the bill because my understanding is that it doesn't increase the number of animals being taken. It allows for it to move it from the state paying somebody to go take those animals to hunters paying to be able to go hunt, and instead of an expense, it creates an income for the state. So I support this bill. I want to try to see the state cut in whatever ways it can, and when we have people who are willing to go out and do it and pay us to do it, why not use them instead of paying somebody a lot of money to go do it? I think that cougars are fantastic creatures too. I appreciate their beauty, and I understand that they have a place in the wilderness, but this bill doesn't increase the number to be taken. It only changes who's doing it. Thank you.
Any questions?
Oh.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to have the department come up and sit down and have a seat.
They look thrilled.
Yeah. Don't look so enthusiastic.
Of course.
You're welcome.
Go chair. I've been working for the better part of 20 years trying to get the department down to the department here.
Proceed.
Thanks. Co-Chair Esquivel, Co-Chair Clem, for the record, Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife, did not come with any prepared testimony here today. We're happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Representative Springer, did you have a question?
I do. Thank you very much.
Proceed.
Maybe a couple of them, but I think they're pretty brief. So, Kurt, can you talk to us a little bit about the cougar numbers in the last maybe 20 years, how those have been impacted? There seems to be a belief that we have less cougars than ever, and so I need some information to help me put that together when we're seeing more cougars.
Sure. Co-Chair Esquivel, Co-Chair Clem, Representative Springer. We gave a very lengthy overview of cougar management history back in, I believe it was March of 2011 at a very similar hearing. Cougar populations, and I'll just give you really the 40,000-foot flyover. Back in the mid-1960s, we estimated the population to be statewide at about 200 individual animals. At that time, the legislature changed the status of cougars from a predatory animal to a game mammal, and the commission then took over management authority of cougars when they're at that roughly 200 animal statewide population estimate. We saw cougar numbers really start to build back through the 70s and into the 80s. By the mid-1990s, we estimated the population at about 3,000 animals statewide. 1994 was the ballot measure. I think it's been discussed here earlier in the hearing. And since 1994, we now estimate currently that the cougar population statewide is about 5,700 animals.
Thank you. Follow-up, please. Actually, it's not a follow-up to that question. New question. Can you talk to us a little bit about the impact of... Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you talk to us a little bit about the impact of cougars and being
big game population?
Co-chairs, Representative Springer, certainly we've done a lot of work on big game research, particularly in Northeast Oregon, but other areas of the state as well, with regard to limiting factors. And really, I'm going to let Ron Anglin talk maybe perhaps about a little more specifics if you have them. But we've found that in a number of areas that really one of the limiting factors is typically juvenile overwinter survival. So in the case of elk, it would be calf survival. In the case of deer, it would be fawn survival. And one of the primary limiting factors in survival of those first-year individuals is predation. And I'd really like to have Ron Anglin answer any more specifics on that if you all have more specific questions.
I'd love to hear, Mr. Chair, I'd love to hear if Ron has anything to add to that.
Co-chairs Clem and Escobar, members of the committee, for the record, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator. We have conducted research in Northeast Oregon, master's project through Oregon State University that looked at nutrition on elk calf survival, looked at predation, and discovered that predation was the main thing that was holding down calf survival and recruitment within those units. We have conducted some what we call management research in the Heppner unit, and we found that by reducing the cougar population within the unit, we right at doubled the elk calf survival in the spring and the recruitment into the population. So it went from around 15 calves per 100 cows in the spring up to around 30-31 calves per 100 cows in the spring after the 3 years of removal. We're currently doing additional research again through Oregon State University in Northeast Oregon that shows the ratio of deer fawn or deer and elk that are being eaten by cougars within a unit. We have GPS collars on cats, and we're monitoring locations going in on kill sites and documenting the animals that are being killed. And it's a significant number. It's about 50-50 on deer and elk calves and deer adults, and we're using that to help us again, monitor what the impacts are to populations and look at what we might be able to do in the future from a management standpoint.
With your indulgence, Mr. Chair, one brief, and I bet these gentlemen will be brief in their answer. So let's talk very briefly about conflicts, and I don't want to say the increased number of conflicts. There seems to be that assumption. So would you speak to that, if that's a correct assumption, in the number of conflicts estimated, and what has happened over time to that number?
For your co-chairs, Representative Springer, I'll give a very brief answer, and then Ron can chime in if you like. So I think certainly we have seen an increase in conflicts over the last, not just the last 20 years, really over the last 40 years. If you've been around the state, spent any amount of time in the woods back in the 1960s or 1970s, it was very uncommon to see or find any evidence of cougars. Very uncommon, in fact, almost unheard of in the 1960s to have evidence or cougar depredation, problems with livestock. That's not to be unexpected. We estimate there was 200 of those animals statewide, so of course you would see less predation or depredation. Now it's much, much more common, and we do have in some areas significant issues with livestock depredation and cougars. And I think one very significant one in, I believe it was in your district last year or so.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for your patience, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? So let me get this straight, gentlemen. We're not doing anything different than we are currently doing today, only it's going to be today we're doing it at an expense. This would be a revenue input for the state of Oregon. Is that correct? Because it would be under the jurisdiction of ODF&W and the counties, correct?
Co-chair Escobar, we have cougar target areas now where we are using our authority under the current state law to use hounds to pursue and control cougar populations. Under any expanded opportunity like is contemplated in this bill, I would think that we would much reduce, if not be able to eliminate, that expense and utilize individuals who would purchase a tag, and then we would focus their efforts into the areas where we wanted to see cougar numbers controlled. So
thank you.
Yep.
gentlemen. Okay, I'm going to close public hearing on House Bill 4119. I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 4119.
For the record, committee, while we've been in here, you did receive a minimal fiscal impact statement, and you do have a no revenue impact statement, and there is a subsequent referral to the committee on ways and means.
Entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4119 to the floor with the subsequent referral to ways and means with the due pass recommendation.
Co-chair Clem has moved House Bill 4119 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to ways and means. Any discussion? Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just, in keeping with my personal policy about not going against the will of the voters, I'll not be supporting the bill today.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very quickly, thank you for hearing this bill. A couple things I just want to point out is, number one, we're not changing the Cougar Management Plan. This does not call for a plan. And because of the will of the voters, any county that does not want to participate does not participate. Speaking of the will of the voters in my district, they wanted to do this, and they didn't have an opportunity. And one of the issues that have come up over the last 2 years is one of the biggest reasons to not support this, and I've heard it over and over, is nobody's been hurt yet. That, to me, infers that we're waiting for something to do something, and I'm not willing to do that. No.
Any other comments? Any objection? We have one. Let's call the roll, please. And Representative Cowan is excused for a family emergency.
Representative Boone.
No.
Representative Jensen.
Aye.
Representative Shuffler.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Co-Chair Clem.
Aye.
Co-Chair Esquivel.
Aye. So moved. Close the public, close the work session on House Bill 4119. Okay, I'm going to reopen the public hearing on House Bill 4098.
All right.
We have the next group of people we have is Dave Ivanoff. I'm sorry if I slayed that, Dave. Paul Cosgrove.
Back there, hovers in the back. I'm sure he stayed on this.
And Lori Satinspiel.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. I'm Dave Ivanoff, Vice President of Resources for Hampton Lumber, a family-owned forest products company employing 480 people at our sawmills in Willamina, Tillamook, and Warrenton. Our sawmills are currently operating at about 60% of normal capacity, and they provide family wage jobs in those hard-hit rural communities. All of our mills are heavily dependent upon state timber outputs, especially in Northwest Oregon. Attached to my testimony is a spreadsheet showing how, through implementation of House Bill 4098, higher and sustainable timber output levels would accrue. Relative to the current management strategy, implementation of House Bill 4098 would increase timber harvest levels by over 125 million feet a year, generating an additional $38 million of revenue flow to the citizens of the state just on the three North Coast districts, not counting state lands elsewhere. Harvesting at this higher level would harvest only 81% of the annual growth, so timber inventories would continue to increase over time. In my view, we can ill afford to ignore the opportunity to improve Oregon's economy by continuing with a forest management plan that is harvesting less than 50% of the annual growth rate. And while an ODF model may show slightly different numbers, any credible analysis will show that relative to what's currently being done, the difference in what is possible is staggering in terms of the timber output levels, revenue flow, and the job creation that would accrue. In 2009 and 2010, I participated on a public advisory committee appointed by the Board of Forestry. My colleagues on that committee and I worked together over a course of about 4 months, and at the final meeting, I illustrated to them essentially the same kind of spreadsheet I've given you that shows how we could, at the same time protecting the environmental values about which we all care, we could significantly improve Oregon's economy. And while that committee did not get a chance to vote on my opportunity. I'm convinced that had they done so, they would have approved it. The FTLAC, of which Tim Josie is chair, at its April 9, 2010 meeting unanimously endorsed that proposal and recommended the Board of Forestry implement it. In summary, the need for improved public timber supply has never been greater. Its family-owned companies like Hampton are imperiled with inadequate raw material as never before. I respectfully request this legislation be passed to keep our forest and rural communities healthy and to maintain the existing forest infrastructure in this state. Unless some action is taken to improve public timber supply, the unnecessary loss of employment in our rural communities will intensify, and the continued shredding of the social fabric of those small rural communities is going to harm all of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Paul.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, Paul Cosgrove. I'm here with a different hat in which I usually appear in front of committees. I'm the informal representative of the Oregon Committee. It's an organization of businesses all over this state. They represent natural resource businesses, manufacturing businesses, services businesses, small businesses, big ones in urban and rural areas, north, south, east, west, central Oregon as well. And we have brought for your consideration this bill with the assistance, of course, of Representative Olson and the other sponsors, and another bill that will be heard in an hour or so in this room in front of another committee. And the reason we've done that is we all believe that the greatest problem and challenges faced by this state can only be met when we get people back to work. It's the greatest problem and challenge we have for people as individuals and their families. It's the greatest problem and challenge we have for communities in this state, for our local governments, as well as our state government. And it's the only way we get out of the revenue problems that we have, and as a state government provides services to the people. So even though many of us have no particular individual personal stake in any of the results of this, we all have an individual and personal stake as Oregonians in the results of this bill. So we would urge your passage of this bill. Thank you very much.
Lori Satin's bill for the Oregon School Boards Association here in support of House Bill 4098 and the Dash 4s. We have locally elected board members who work and live in their communities, and or maybe used to work at this point. These communities need jobs. The school districts have been impacted by the loss of revenues. This bill, as the governor said, he has a plan. I think this is part of the solution. So this is a step. With the loss of the Secure Rules Schools Act, which is now sunsetting, we again are taking a big hit in school districts and the county services. In many schools, we have a growing number of students who eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner in the schools. The distribution formula, which helps to fund schools, called the State School Fund, has an additional weight that's given to a small and remote school. So if a district qualifies, they get an additional bump, which helps support the additional comprehensive quality of education that they have to provide. Currently, we have one of those allocations going away, and it's sunsetting in 12, and working on increasing that. For a school like Oakland in Douglas County, that's a K-12 district of 536 students, that's $30,000. That means if we don't get this bump allocated, that's loss of a teacher or two. Districts, another impact, districts go to their communities for a bond. We need a facilities bond for maintenance. We need a levy. Greater challenges for the local support from a family that used to be two wage earners, and now maybe there's just one. Jobs create revenue for the state, which we've heard. Most importantly, it sustains families. Mm-hmm. Representative Schaffler. Re-energizes local communities and helps schools. I urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Hi, Dave. Nice to see you. Do you have any sense of how helpful this bill would be to your payroll in particular as a company? Because I know you're in the area probably more than a lot of there's some other timber companies up there, but do you have any estimates on how helpful it might be?
Well, the reality is, Representative Clem, is that there is inadequate public timber available right now. The region's mills are operating at about 65% of normal capacity right now. Since the listing of the spotted owl and the marbled murrelet in the early 90s, Oregon's forest product sector has been importing volume from Western Washington and British Columbia, with the volume of logs now going to China, especially from Western Washington and British Columbia. That needed timber that has kept Oregon mills afloat is gone. And so what you have right now is a perfect storm where you have difficult market conditions. You're trying to keep the people employed in the mills so that the opportunity to go back to work is fully available. But when that time comes, there's not going to be the timber available unless something's done to improve public timber supply. And while I acknowledge Governor Kitzhaber's comments about the federal lands, our Oregon delegation is working on a bill to try to figure out how to manage the ONC lands. And it's a very responsible, rationed approach where we would take half the lands and set them aside. And 7 conservation groups in this state have come out in opposition to that. This federal program is not going to get fixed. And as one speaker mentioned earlier today, this is something that we can fix. And there's no good reason to underutilize the natural resource wealth that we have in this state to improve the social fabric of these small rural communities. And our company is heavily dependent on timber supply in Northwest Oregon. And we're hanging by a thread.
So, sorry, just to follow, like hundreds of jobs potentially, or more, you know, several shifts more potentially?
There's no question that we're currently operating at about 60% of capacity. If there was more timber available, we could ramp up our production accordingly. But I'm almost of the point saying that we're trying to save the jobs we have because we are imperiled as never before.
Yeah. By the way, I was a complex manager there in the 80s.
Pardon me?
I was a complex manager at Willamette Lumber Company in the 80s.
Oh.
Representative Johnson.
Glad you fired him.
Yeah, there you go. It's the best thing you ever did.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Laurie, I just want to thank you and OSBA for stepping up on this issue and making the connection between what's best for kids and natural resource development. We don't make that argument or that connection often enough in this building. And since we have so many education policy initiatives floating around, I think it's past due time to recognize that the best thing we can do to help a kid learn is make sure that he or she have a parent that has a job, because they're going to get to school, they're going to get fed, somebody's going to help them with their homework. I mean, it just provides a stable environment for that learning to help. So thanks for being here, and I wish we could get more people like you and your agency advocating on behalf of good, sound, natural resource development.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Darn, Representative Johnson. That's exactly what I was going to say, and I just will so briefly add, many of us talk about the connection between take more money out of the pot to fund something and grow the pot. And that's what this is talking about, grow the pot of money, not deeper fighting over the money that's already in the pot. And so hats off to OSBA for coming out on record making that connection, and we need to have that strongly.
Mr. Chair, ever so briefly. So, we have the schools here. I wish the public employees unions were here because it benefits them directly. AFSCME and the firefighters have come up and supported these concepts in the past. We have a business community here from all over the state, and we have someone who actually operates a mill and works in the forest. And I want the list of the 7 organizations that oppose the federal plan that Walden and DeFazio and Schrader are working on so diligently. Because I got news for you. They're not interested in a comprehensive forestry management plan. They're interested in destroying the timber industry in the state of Oregon, and that's all there is to it. And everyone in here knows it. And if we don't do something like this, you close those mills down, they're done. They're not going to open up again. That's a fact. They're dotted all over the state. And I'm sick of people coming in here saying, we got to wait, we got to study, we got to work together. Because guess what? We haven't been working together for 30 years. And I don't see it changing in the next 30. But I really appreciate you coming in here. I do. And thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other comments or questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'd like to have Doug Decker come up, please, from the State Forestry ODF, Oregon Department of Forestry.
Good afternoon.
You're on.
Oh, very good. Thank you very much. Co-Chair Esquivel, Co-Chair Clem, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Doug Decker, Oregon State Forester, Director of the Department of Forestry. I'm joined by Mike Caffaretta here, the Acting Chief of our State Forest Division. I'm pleased to offer some thoughts on the bill and respond to any questions that you have. First, I want to appreciate the ongoing conversation about the future of state forests. I've worked on state forest issues throughout my career with the department, 25 years, and believe that there will always be a robust discussion about natural resource choices. All of us care deeply about these resources and about the communities that that depend on us and depend on them as well. I wanted to speak specifically about how we would implement House Bill 4098. I want to describe it in relation to the current state policy and touch briefly on actions that are underway by the Board of Forestry to and the Department to shape the future of these lands. And also, just to make a note to those involved in drafting the bill, we've appreciated being contacted in advance of the session and being able to have a good conversation about the role and contribution of state forests. So we have not yet specifically been able to model what 95% looks like specifically on the landscape, but we believe that the strategy would, over the next 3 to 5 years, produce a significant increase in timber volume, somewhere in the neighborhood of about 100 million board feet. And just to put that number in context, today we harvest about 220 million board feet annually from 7 West Side State Forest districts, including the Tillamook and the Clatsop State Forest, which produce about 180 million board feet combined between the Tillamook and the Clatsop State Forest. I'd want to point out that the direction in this bill represents a major departure from our currently approved forest management plans, from our 10-year implementation plans, as well as our annual operations plans. And an early important piece of business here would be to amend and align those pieces to coincide with the statute change, including the current including the greatest permanent value rule. So as the planning infrastructure would come into place, the sales would be set up. Purchasers have 3 years to harvest the contract, so we wouldn't see a direct impulse directly of revenue necessarily right away. Our fiscal impact statement, which we filed, tries to outline the flow of revenue. We would see some higher costs for the first several years as we put the new program in place in the neighborhood of about $600,000 this fiscal and $2.5 million in the next biennium. But on the revenue side, when it's fully implemented, we think that this would increase revenue to the counties, 15 of them that have state forests in them, by about $17 million per year above the average $45 million per year that we currently provide. So, again, the bill does represent a significant departure from the legislative direction as well as the departure from the board's greatest permanent value rule, which they adopted in the late 1990s and which they have recently affirmed, and from direction that's included in the forest management plan. So there clearly would be trade-offs.
Thank you. Any questions, comments?
What was the sustainable level for the forest that it's, and maybe I'm wrong, my understanding that we're a little bit under that level now?
Well, our Chair Esquivel, Representative Boone, our harvest level right now is around about 220 million board feet, and so that is, you know, very close to, on those 7 state forest districts, that's very close to you know, what our plan calls for, what the forest management plan calls for.
Okay. For the phone, what is that? Do you know that level? Just
do you want to reflect on that?
Yeah, Chair Esquivel, Representative Boone, I think your question is about what is a sustainable harvest level on those forests.
Need your name, please.
Yes, Mike Caffaretta, Deputy Chief in the State Forest Division. Thank you. Well, I think it depends on which forest management regime you're looking for. So under the Forest Practices Act, we're at about 60 or 70% of what you could sustain under the Forest Practices Act. I don't have that number right here in front of me. It's in the 320 million board feet.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Briefly, thank you. We are not going to go outside of the allowable harvestable level within the current Oregon Forestry Practices Act. That is correct. One more, please. We're not changing virtually any environmental or labor standards whatsoever under the language of this bill. Is that correct as well?
I believe that it does represent a change from our administrative rule. We could certainly implement this. We believe that we could implement this within the context of the Forest Practices Act.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. We are not changing any environmental standards when it comes to physically logging in the forest with this bill. Is that correct?
Representative Shoffler, we would comply with the Threatened Endangered Species Act, right, in a take avoidance mode, correct?
With or without this bill, correct?
That's the strategy that we use right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much.
Appreciate the direct answer. Any other question? Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bill Perry? Chris? Mm-hmm. Jarm? Oh, I'm sorry. I couldn't read it. Tim Josie?
Co-chairs Clement Escobar, members of the committee, for the record, Bill Perry at the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. I, like the previous business representative, been working with a bunch of different business groups to try to put this on the forefront of the issues to face here in Oregon. And the reason specifically for our organization is the Portland restaurant and lodging business has been coming back. It's not back where it was in 2007, but the rural communities are lagging behind. So we're trying to find some different issues that can do direct job development in some of these rural issues. The reason this is important from my standpoint is when you look at the North Coast specifically, the road system there is subpar. Obviously, they're having a hard time generating the revenue to keep up the road development, especially on the county roads. We worked with Tillamook County last time to try to get a bond measure passed there. Obviously, we weren't successful. But tourism relies heavily on roads, and so when large roads wash out or hurt in any way, it ruins basically tourism travel. And most of you that were here during the whole spotted owl crisis, they said, why don't we replace tourism jobs with a lot of these timber jobs? Well, they don't exist independently. If we want good, strong rural communities, we need to have balanced and diversified economic base. And so we do need to address the federal, but this is something we can control. It only deals with new growth. So I think this is a good balance, and it'll help balance the economy in these rural areas as it's very well needed in this time. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Co-Chairs, members, Chris Jarmer, Oregon Forest Industries Council. Just want to put on the record that we're in full support of the bill and want to say thank you to the Oregon Committee. Thank you to Representative Olson, and thank you for hearing this bill, and hope you pass it out. Thank you very much.
Good. Do I get the rest of his time? Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Tim Josie, a Tillamook County Commissioner and Chair of the Forest Trust Land Counties. I'm going to skip through the first part of my testimony. I spent about 3 hours preparing it this morning, but you already know this stuff. You know how badly we're hurting. So I'm going to get right to the meat and potatoes of what I'm saying. I prepared some handouts for you folks. This is one that you folks need to spend a little bit of time looking at. It's actually prepared by the Department of Forestry. I agree with everything that the governor said, except for one thing. What nobody has said, and it's a truth, is the department is in big trouble financially today. About 3 years ago, they laid off 30% of their employees. 30% of their employees. Now, the Forest Development Fund is in danger of, in 2013, the two lines cross, and from here on out, they're going to be running in the red. So the department is in a real financial crisis in terms of making their own budget. So keep that in mind. And so now I'll move on. As the chair of the trust counties, I want you to know the counties haven't had a chance to weigh in on this legislation, and so I can't represent the counties.
But I did dredge up a position that we made had in that we took in 2006, and I'll just read, and it's in here in its entirety, but I'll just read the salient paragraph. FTLAC, this is the Forest Trust Lands Advisory Committee, same group as the trust counties, believe a responsible average annual harvest level that meets the fiduciary responsibility of the state of the state to the trust counties should be no less than 90% of the Forest Practices Act. Forest Practices Act, what we know now is for the three Northwest districts, is about 272 million board feet. I work with this stuff all the time. So 90% of the Forest Practices Act as applied to a maximum biological potential as determined in step one. You can find out what step one is. But anyway, that was our position then. So the one thing I want you to notice is she's saying my time's up. Can I say a little more, Mr. Chair?
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
This was written to the Board of Forestry, and that's the point that I want to make. We really do believe that this is something that the Board of Forestry ought to do. Now, they've worked with this in the past, but the problem is they finally modified the plan, but it's not modified enough to keep us viable and the department viable. So my closing point, and I want you to pay attention to this. If you really want to do us a favor, this is it. If you really want to help us, then pass legislation that establishes a formal trust where the counties are designated as beneficiaries and the Board of Forestry is established as trustee with a strict fiduciary duty to the beneficiaries. We've been trying for this for years. We've had two times we've gone to court. We've had to sue the state. We've won. Two circuit court judges have said there's a fiduciary responsibility there, a contract and all that stuff, but that has no basis in law. And we've had attorney general's opinions years ago that said that there was a trust relationship. Current ones say no. And so if you want to help us, that's how you do it. Thank you for giving me some extra time.
Great.
Great. Yeah, and welcome to my constituent and former employer in this seat, very same seat. And in all reality, Tim's one of the most experienced people in this sector and able to explain things in such a way that most people can understand them. And really, it's unfortunate you don't have more time because it could be a whole committee hearing's worth in that sense. But and I think you answered my question, so I appreciate that, too. And that's what I was getting at, is where we are now, what was the sustainability level that would, you know, you could cut and grow and cut and grow in perpetuity. And where are we now, where this bill would put us, and how that works.
So it's under the Forest Practices Act, the three Northwest districts would be a sustainable level of harvest, if my figures are right, 272 million board feet per year.
Just a quick follow-up.
Brief.
I know, because I'm in here too, so I don't have to go too far after this. But I do appreciate that, and I appreciate our governor coming forward and what he said. And this is just such a small, short session to do such big work in, and I just hope that we can, after this session's over in a couple of weeks, that we can move on and continue moving toward this and getting some of this settled, because it's, you know, my district is most of this forest land.
And I am on a work group working with the department to work through their financial problems. Hopefully they'll open up the forest management plan, which is my end goal or my end game.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Thank you.
Mike Sullivan, Rebecca Roth, and Jan Meekums. We'll see.
Rebecca Roth and Co-chair at Esquivel and members of the committee. I'm just hanging out here this afternoon, and it seemed to me important that as a taxpayer that I just speak pro this. I remember back, like some of you others that share gray hair, when Oregon was had a lot of timber being cut, and we were a prosperous state, and I would like to return to that. I feel like when the spotted owl event happened, we were under the impression that there was a relationship with the spotted owl and the number of old growth trees. But it's my understanding now from things I've read and heard that that's not a direct relationship. There's been no scientific evidence to show that. And that instead there's other factors related to the number of spotted owls. And I remember when last year I went to a meeting that, or a hearing that was talking about when those 800 numbers that you call on the television, and you order something on the spur of the moment, and then it comes and it's nothing like they advertised, and then you want to return it and you can't get a hold of them, you can't get your money back, and you guys were, I don't know which committee it was, but they were saying that's bad for businesses to do that to consumers. And I feel that this is the spotted owl thing was bad for whoever it was that put it together to do that to us as people in here in Oregon. We have a right to live here too. We have a right to use the resources of Oregon. And one other thing is that deer can eat the grass when the trees are chopped down, because the grass grows.
Oh. And some of us like to shoot them off the grass.
Wait a minute. Yes.
Hello. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Jan Meekums, the State Director for National Federation of Independent Businesses, NFIB. We have about 7,000 members currently in Oregon. And in the fall of 2011, NFIB conducted a national survey and among small business owners. And over 3,500 small businesses responded. And 52% of them said that their number one concern was lack of customers, lack of people who could pay for their goods and services. In our monthly Small Business Optimism Index, the January report that was just released today, states a net percent of owners expecting better business conditions in 6 months was a negative 3%. That's 13 percent points below last year's reading. And it is well known and publicized that, yes, Oregon needs jobs. This bill has the potential to put Oregonians back to work in our communities that have been hardest hit by our lagging economy. Jobs create customers for our small businesses. Working Oregonians create less strain on our social services, our government programs, and budgets. As the economy is also directly affected by the confidence of its people, the passage of HB 4098 could perhaps begin to build the confidence that in Oregon, jobs are being created, and we are rounding the bend towards a future of prosperity rather than austerity. NFIB supports HB 4098. Thank you.
Mike.
Co-chairs Clem and Escobar. For the record, my name is Mike Sullivan. I am the political director in Oregon for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers. Our organization supports this bill. The word's jobs. And what we forget in industry is for every industrial job that is created, there are feeder jobs of 4 to 6. We have to have an economy in our college. Thank you.
Amen.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you. Next group, we'd like to have Tom Wolf, Stephen Kafori, and Warren Arning.
Do you want to say on deck while they're coming in?
On deck is Gus Meyer, Ivan Molusky, and Ian Ferguson. Stand by on deck, because we're running out of time.
Co-Chair Escobel, Co-Chair Clem, committee members, for expedience sense, I will not, you have my testimony, you can read it, Basically, the short message is Travel Limited opposes this bill, not because we're not concerned about jobs, but we're concerned that by passing a bill like this, this interrupts the process of Department of Forestry, a process where we have seven good, sincere, intelligent people that sit on the Board of Forestry and monitor what's being done by the Department of Forestry, which is full of 1,000 good, serious, professional people working on management plans. So I certainly understand the frustration that is shared in this room, but I think that we currently have a good process. If we want to renegotiate that process through the Board of Forestry, that's certainly something that Trout Unlimited is open to, but I believe that this bill is the wrong answer to that, and it would seriously violate. I just want to close. It was interesting listening to your cougar bill. I believe that Measure 18 to ban cougar and bear hunting was a misguided attempt by my community, the environmental community. It was the wrong thing to do, and now you're trying to fix that. When we go outside the management of our professional
can we
natural
stick to
resources
this subject,
agencies,
please?
What?
We're pressed for time. Can
yes,
we,
and I'm
can
done.
Can we stick to this subject? Thank you.
No, I did say, I'm just saying.
And I need you. I need your name.
Yes, Tom Wolf, Chair of the Oregon Council of Travel Limited.
Thank you.
What's new here?
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Cafore. I'm here with the Oregon Chapter of the Wildlife Society, which is the professional and scientific society of wildlife biologists in the state of Oregon. And I have with me Warren Aney, who's our legislative director, who's a professional biologist and would like to give testimony. You have written testimony. We won't be long.
Thank you, Stephen.
I do want to finish. I think what Mr. Wolf is trying to say is that management by the professional association, by the professional management teams of the boards and the folks who work under them is the best way to manage our natural resources, and that's what the testimony that we're going to be out to give.
Chairman Escobar and Clem, co-chair. My name is Warren Aney. I am a professional wildlife ecologist. I'm from Tigard, Oregon. And Stephen has told you, as you told me, I'm representing the Oregon Chapter of the Wildlife Society. I'm going to be real brief. We helped with the structure, develop the structure-based management approach that the Department of Forestry has in its management plans. These should provide the range and diversity that's needed to sustain healthy and populations, including species of wildlife species of concern. Maximizing timber revenue or volume will not provide the greatest permanent value to the citizens of Oregon. Instead, maintaining healthy populations of native fish and wildlife species and preserving and improving water quality and stream function will provide substantial and important long-term benefits for our citizens. The Oregon Board of Forestry has a professionally effective staff that is able to collect and use scientifically valid resource information, which we support, to make sound resource management decisions. That balances all the benefits and values of forested lands. We'd be happy to serve on the governor's chair to see if we can solve some of the problems on federal lands, because there is an opportunity there.
Thank you. Any questions?
I really hope so.
Thank you. Next group, Gus Meyer, Ivan Molusky, and Ian Ferguson. That's it. That's it. Please be brief. We have to leave here at 3 o'clock.
We have
four bills to go through. So it's going to be like an auctioneer.
Yeah.
Co-chairs Escobel and Clem, my name is Ian Ferguson. I'm on the board of directors of the Association of Northwest Steelheaders. The Steelheaders comprise about 1,300 members with a very strong rural and blue-collar component, and we understand the value of forest jobs. We also understand the value of balanced natural resource policies, and we oppose House Bill 4098. Like several of the people who testified prior to this, we believe that there is an inherent conflict with the greatest permanent value rule. There is an inherent conflict with the Northwest Forest Management Plan, and a possible inherent conflict. And there certainly is a conflict with the established process for deciding on state forest policy. And we second the call for the professionals to handle this. Thank you.
Co-Chair Esquivel and Co-Chair Clem, members of the committee. Gus Meyer, for the record, I'm here to yield my time in support of Tim Josie's overtime, and I am happy to say I support the bill for Tillamook County.
Chair Esquivel and Clem, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Ivan Molesto, the Conservation Director for the Oregon Chapter Sierra Club. We're urging your opposition to this legislation today. We believe this bill would be a serious departure from current management plans, which represent a balance of interests on roughly 500,000 acres of state-owned, publicly-owned forest land, mandating logging levels similar to what you might find on industrial timberlands. And I just want to make a point here that there is no free lunch. There are trade-offs in whatever you do. If we are going to set timber mandates, you are going to have negative impacts on water quality, recreation, and salmon recovery on publicly-owned state forests that essentially put logging above all other uses on these important public lands. Current management plans do allow the agency, ODF, significant flexibility to manage based on both ecological and economic factors. This bill ties their hands and forces them to increase logging, even if there's no market for the timber. We've debated this type of bill in past sessions. I am of the belief that if we had passed this bill in 2009, it would have been a disaster. We would have been essentially giving away public resources to private industry at a time when the housing market simply would not sustain such demand for the supply that we would be offering. This bill is no more advisable than it was at that time. Despite strong public support for protecting, increasing protection for clean water, recreation areas, and salmon habitat on state lands, this bill takes us the opposite direction. I'll point out a few things. There are significant economic values associated with recreation on these lands. Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has conducted studies that show that in 2008 alone, fishing, hunting, wildlife viewing, and shell fishing contributed nearly $150 million of economic activity to these North Coast counties. We believe that would be compromised with this legislation. Further, some believe this legislation is about job creation, and we disagree. Because of mechanization and efficiency within the timber industry over the past two decades, as well as the growth in raw log exports and the crashed domestic housing market that has closed down mills in recent years, any job creation numbers advanced by the proponents of this bill are likely inflated. To point this out, consider the fact that timber harvest in Tillamook Clatsop counties doubled from 1990 to 2006, from 160 million to 350 million.
Hey, time's up.
Only 28 jobs are created. So we urge your opposition to this legislation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions? Real brief.
Quick welcome to my constituent, Gus Meyer. Welcome.
Thank you. Okay, no one else has signed up, so therefore we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4098. We're going to open up a work session on House Bill 4098.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash four amendments to House Bill 4098.
Co-Chair Clem has moved the dash four amendments to House Bill 4098. Any discussion?
Representative Olson is supportive of the dash fours.
Yes, yeah. I believe so.
Thank you.
Any dash objection?
This moves it from 95 to
85. Seeing none, so moved. And Representative Cowan is excused.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4098 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Co-Chair Clem has moved House Bill 4098 to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
One moment. I do have some mixed feelings about not the bill, but the underlying tactics that one of my good friends is engaged in. I woke up this morning thinking about shooting the hostage right here, but then I knew I'd have to look at my friends at Hampton Lumber and all the people depending on the jobs and decided I would leave this hostage to its own merits, and I will be supporting the bill.
Mr. Chair, there is nothing in the rules of the House that alludes to hostage. We are going through a parliamentary process, and bills sometimes get re-referred to committee to get a closer look. That's what we've done in the five sessions I've been here. This bill is a great bill, and this bill is probably going to pass unanimously. We heard a lot about unanimous votes yesterday.
Oh, yes.
Here's going to be another one. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson, Brooke.
Okay. Oh, fine. I'm ready to go, Mr. Chair.
Any objection? Seeing none, so moved. We'll have Representative Olson carry that.
It's got a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
Ways and Means.
That's right, it does. Okay, so it's going to Ways and Means, so we won't. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 4098, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 4090.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 11 amendments to House Bill 4090.
There's been a Representative Clem has moved the dash 11 amendments to House Bill 4090. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so moved.
I think you have an objection.
Oh, I'm sorry. Didn't see that finger up there.
Objection?
You have an objection?
No comment. Just objection.
Okay.
So, just no.
Call the roll.
Oh, forgive me. Was it, we on House Bill 4090, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I object as well.
Let's switch. Sorry, just to confirm. So the current motion on the table that we have is to adopt the Dash 11 amendments and then discussion on the adoption of the amendments.
I don't object to the amendments.
Okay. So just call the roll.
Representative
Bill.
On the amendments
to
the bill.
Amendments.
Okay.
Well, are we going to discuss them, though, you said?
49. No, we're out of time.
Okay.
They're good.
So I believe she's calling the roll on the adoption of the Dash 11 amendment.
Correct. On House Bill 4090.
Yes. House Bill 4090.
Thank you.
Representative Bowes.
Aye.
Representative
Jensen.
No.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair. Co-Vice Chair Fallon.
Excused.
Co-Vice Chair Johnson.
Yes.
Co-Chair Esteban.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, I move the House Bill 4090 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Clem has moved House Bill 4090 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Any discussion? Seeing none, call the roll, please.
Representative Bowes.
Aye.
Representative Jensen.
Aye.
Representative Shoffler.
No.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Johnson.
Yes.
Co-Chair Clem.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we'll move that onto the House floor. We have the carriers of, I'll close the public hearing, the work session on 4090. We'll have Representative Sheehan and Representative Clem. Would you pull that? Okay, I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 4072.
Need an amendment on Dash 6.
You lost your chair.
Is there an amendment, Tommy?
Yeah.
What's the amendment?
House Bill on the sixth, on the Sixth Amendment?
4092.
Or 4072.
4072. Oh, it's the one.
Sorry.
Okay.
You want to double check that while we're
so there wouldn't be any dash.
I was just going to make the motion.
Checking something else real quick. So the dash, Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 6 amendments to House Bill 4072.
Co-Chair Clem has moved the adoption of the Dash 6 amendments to House Bill 4072. Any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative
Jones. Aye.
Representative Jensen.
Aye.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Co-Chair Clem.
Aye.
Co-Chair Esteban.
Aye. I'll close the, so moved, and we'll close the work session on House Bill 4072.
No, we have to move the bill.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting way ahead of myself here. Okay, I'll reopen that work session on House Bill 4072.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4072 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Co-Chair Clem moves House Bill 4072 as amended with the Dash 6 amendments to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
I just need to note in the record there's an electronic, there's a copy of the previous contract between these parties historically. And also I just want to state that there has never been any displacement of ODOT or ODF workers by any fire protection association, and that's the intent of the legislature to continue that trend and understanding.
That's what the Dash 6 outlined. So any further discussion? Seeing none, call the roll.
Aye.
Representative Jensen. Aye. Representative Shoffler. Aye. Everything
is
aye.
Co-Vice
Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Co-Chair Clutch.
Aye.
Co-Chair Esteban.
Aye. Okay, I'll close the work session on House Bill 4072, and I will carry that bill. Okay, I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 4158.
Don't recess when
you can. Yeah, don't recess. Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 6 amendments to House Bill 4158.
Okay. Co-Chair Clem has moved the Dash 6 amendments to House Bill 4158. Any discussion? Call the roll.
Representative
Bowes.
Aye.
Representative
Jensen.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Co-Chair Clem.
Aye.
Co-Chair Esteban.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
He's going to close the work session on House Bill 4158.
No, you just adopt the amendment, so you're going to open up this because you just adopt the amendment, correct?
Yeah.
So now you have to vote on that the bill.
Oh, that was
general.
Just the amendment?
Yes. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move.
We'll reopen it.
I move that the House Bill 4158 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Co-Chair Clem has moved House Bill 4158 with the -6 amendments as an appendage to the House Bill with a due pass recommendation. Any discussions? Any questions? Call the roll, please.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative
Benson.
Representative Shockley.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Johnson.
Excuse.
Co-Chair Clem.
Aye.
Co-Chair Escobar.
Aye. And
Vance Carrier.
We'll have, I'll close the public, the work session on House Bill 4158, and we'll have Representative Vance carry that.
We'll recess the meeting for just a quick moment.
Okay, I will recess.
Are we done?
What do we share? Okay, I'm going to take us out of recess back to our committee, and then do we have anything for the cause? Seeing none, I'm going to adjourn.